Hello, and welcome to Family Folktales from the Nashville Public Library. I'm Susan Poulter, a librarian at the Main Library. Today's story is Rosanella, a French tale found in Andrew Lang's Green Fairy Book. Everybody knows that though fairies live hundreds of years, they do sometimes die. And especially as they are obliged to pass one day in every week under the form of some animal, when of course they are liable to accident. It was in this way that death once overtook the queen of the fairies, and it became necessary to call a general assembly to elect a new sovereign. After much discussion, it appeared that the choice lay between two fairies, one called Circantine and the other Paridamie, and their claims were so equal that it was impossible without injustice to prefer one to the other. Under these circumstances, it was unanimously decided that whichever of the two could show to the world the greatest wonder should be queen. But it was to be a special kind of wonder. No moving of mountains or any such common fairy tricks would do. Circantine, therefore, resolved that she would bring up a prince whom nothing could make constant, while Paridamie decided to admiring mortals a princess so charming that no one could see her without falling in love with her. They were allowed to take their own time, and meanwhile the four oldest fairies were to attend to the affairs of the kingdom. Now Paridamie had for a long time been friendly with King Bardanon, who was a most accomplished prince, and whose court was the model of what a court should be. His queen, Balanice, was also charming. Indeed, it is rare to find a husband and wife so perfectly of one mind about everything. They had one little daughter, whom they had named Rosanella, because she had a little pink rose printed upon her white throat. From her earliest infancy, she had shown the most astonishing intelligence, and the courtiers knew her smart sayings by heart and repeated them on all occasions. In the middle of the night, following the assembly of fairies, Queen Balanice woke up with a shriek, and when her maids of honor ran to see what was the matter, they found that she had had a frightful dream. "I thought," said she, "that my little daughter had changed into a bouquet of roses, and that as I held it in my hand, a bird swooped down suddenly and snatched it from me and carried it away. Let someone run and see that all is well with the princess," she added. So they ran. But what was their dismay when they found that the cradle was empty, and though they sought high and low, not a trace of Rosanella could they discover. The queen was inconsolable, and so indeed was the king. Only being a man, he did not say quite so much about his feelings. He presently proposed to Balanice that they should spend a few days at one of their palaces in the country, and to this she willingly agreed, since her grief made the gaiety of the capital distasteful to her. One lovely summer evening, as they sat together on a shady lawn shaped like a star from which radiated 12 splendid avenues of trees, the queen looked round and saw a charming peasant girl approaching by each path. And what was still more singular was that every one carried something in a basket which appeared to occupy her whole attention. As each drew near, she laid her basket at Balanice's feet, saying, "Charming queen, may this be some slight consolation to you in your unhappiness." The queen hastily opened the baskets and found in each a lovely baby girl, about the same age as the little princess for whom she sorrowed so deeply. At first the sight of them renewed her grief, but presently their charms so gained upon her that she forgot her melancholy in providing them with nursery maids, cradle rockers, and ladies-in-waiting, and in sending hither and thither for swings and dolls and tops and bushels of the finest sweetmeats. Oddly enough, every baby had upon its throat a tiny pink rose. The queen found it so difficult to decide on suitable names for all of them that until she could settle the matter, she chose a special color for everyone, by which it was known, so that when they were all together, they looked like nothing so much as a nosegay of gay flowers. As they grew older, it became evident that though they were all remarkably intelligent and profited equally by the education they received, yet they differed one from another in disposition, so much so that they gradually ceased to be known as pearl or primrose or whatever might have been their color, and the queen instead would say, "Where is my sweet, or my beautiful, or my gay?" Of course, with all these charms, they had lovers by the dozen, not only in their own court, but princes from afar who were constantly arriving, attracted by the reports which were spread abroad. These lovely girls, the first maids of honor, were as discreet as they were beautiful, and favored no one. But let us return to Sirkantine. She had fixed upon the son of a king who was a cousin to Bardondon to bring up as her fickle prince. She had before, at his christening, given him all the graces of mind and body that a prince could possibly require. But now she redoubled her efforts and spared no pains in adding every imaginable charm and fascination, so that whether he simply happened to be cross or amiable, splendidly or simply attired, serious or frivolous, he was always perfectly irresistible. In truth, he was a charming young fellow, since the fairy had given him the best heart in the world, as well as the best head, and had left nothing to be desired but constancy. For it cannot be denied that Prince Mirliflor was a desperate flirt, and as fickle as the wind. So much so that by the time he arrived at his 18th birthday, there was not a heart left for him to conquer in his father's kingdom. They were all his own, and he was tired of everyone. Things were in this state when he was invited to visit the court of his father's cousin, King Bardondon. Imagine his feelings when he arrived and was presented at once to 12 of the loveliest creatures in the world, and his embarrassment was heightened by the fact that they all liked him as much as he liked each one of them, so that things came to such a pass that he was never happy a single instant without them. For could he not whisper soft speeches to Sweet and laugh with joy while he looked at Beauty? And in his more serious moments, what could be pleasanter than to talk to Grave upon some shady lawn while he held the hand of Loving in his own, and all the others lingered near in sympathetic silence? For the first time in his life, he really loved, though the object of his devotion was not one person but 12, to whom he was equally attached. And even Sirkantine was deceived into thinking that this was indeed the height of inconstancy. But Paridamy said not a word. In vain did Prince Mirliflor's father write, commanding him to return, and proposing for him one good match after another. Nothing in the world could tear him from his 12 enchantresses. One day the queen gave a large garden party, and just as the guests were all assembled and Prince Mirliflor was, as usual, dividing his attentions between the 12 beauties, a humming of bees was heard. The rose maidens, fearing their stings, uttered little shrieks and fled all together to a distance from the rest of the company. Immediately, to the horror of all who were looking on, the bees pursued them, and, growing suddenly to an enormous size, pounced each upon a maiden and carried her off into the air, and in an instant they were all lost to view. This amazing occurrence plunged the whole court into the deepest affliction, and Prince Mirliflor, after giving way to the most violent grief at first, fell gradually into a state of such deep dejection that it was feared, if nothing could rouse him, that he would certainly die. Surcantine came in all haste to see what she could do for her darling, but he rejected with scorn all the portraits of lovely princesses which she offered him for his collection. In short, it was evident that he was in a bad way, and the fairy was at her wit's end. One day, as he wandered about absorbed in melancholy reflections, he heard sudden shouts and exclamations of amazement, and if he had taken the trouble to look up, he could not have helped being as astonished as everyone else, for through the air a crystal chariot was slowly approaching, which glittered in the sunshine. Six lovely maidens with shining wings drew it by rose-colored ribbons, while a whole flight of others, equally beautiful, were holding long garlands of roses crossed above it so as to form a complete canopy. In it sat the fairy Paridamy, and by her side a princess whose beauty positively dazzled all who saw her. At the foot of the great staircase they descended and proceeded to the queen's apartments, though everyone had run together to see this marvel, till it was quite difficult to make way through the crowd, and exclamations of wonder rose on all sides at the loveliness of the strange princess. "Great queen," said Paridamy, "permit me to restore to you your daughter Rosanella, whom I stole out of her cradle." After the first transports of joy were over, the queen said to Paridamy, "But my 12 lovely ones, are they lost to me forever? Shall I never see them again?" But Paridamy only said, "Very soon you will cease to miss them," in a tone that evidently meant, "Don't ask me any more questions." And then, mounting again into her chariot, she swiftly disappeared. The news of his beautiful cousin's arrival was soon carried to the prince, but he had hardly the heart to go and see her. However, it became absolutely necessary that he should pay his respects, and he had scarcely been 5 minutes in her presence before it seemed to him that she combined in her own charming person all the gifts and graces which had so attracted him in the 12 rose maidens whose loss he had so truly mourned. And after all, it is really more satisfactory to make love to one person at a time. So it came to pass that before he knew where he was entreating his lovely cousin to marry him. And the moment the words had left his lips, Paridamy appeared, smiling and triumphant, in the chariot Queen of the Fairies. For by that time they had all heard of her success and declared her to have earned the kingdom. She had to give a full account of how she had stolen Rosanella from her cradle and divided her character into 12 parts that each one might charm Prince Mirliflor and, when once more united, might cure him of his inconstancy once and forever. And as one more proof of the fascination of the whole Rosanella, I may tell you that even the defeated Surcantine sent her a wedding gift, and was present at the ceremony which took place as soon as the guests could arrive. Prince Mirliflor was constant for the rest of his life, and indeed, who would not have been in his place? As for Rosanella, she loved him as much as all the 12 beauties put together. So they reigned in peace and happiness to the end of their long lives. That was Rosanella from Andrew Lang's Green Fairy Book. Special thanks to Ginger Sands for our theme music. You can find more of Ginger's music at iTunes or on her website at www.gingersands.com. And if you'd like to comment on today's story, send me an email. I can be reached at susan.poulter, that's P-O-U-L-T-E-R, @nashville.gov. Thanks for listening.